is what it is. We're going to continue, and then I also have something special, so I'm going to watch the time that I want to do something nice that I saw. So we'll continue from last week first, and we're in the middle of the Arayin. And as we were discovering last week that the Arayin, which I mean, everybody knows is a very special keli, a very special vessel in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan and in the Beis HaMikdash. But the depth of it is quite incredible. And as we saw, every detail of its making is so significant. So we are on, in your booklet, I only gave one booklet out in the meantime, try to keep it simple. We're on the second page, which has the number 6. We'll do this semi-orally, semi-inside. Last week we read a lot inside. We'll read some of them inside. So this is a kliyako which continues with the different significances and the meaning and the depth of the Arayin and the way it's built. So here the kliyako will actually be discussing that in the pasuk it says, first of all, the asu, right, that they shall make, which was in the plural, and it said Arayin out of what? Out of atzei shittim, out of the acacia wood. And then it says you should cover it with gold, v'tzipisa isai zahav, right? You should like coat it with gold. And as we explained last week, it's not really coated. It's really 3 boxes. The outside box is gold, the inside box is gold, and the middle box is the one made out of wood. But he says here, what is the significance of all of that? And here, so I'll just show you. We'll see a little bit, as we say, in the kliyakar. So first of all, when it talks about gold, he says, it's covered in gold, but the actual core, in other words, the middle box, is made out of wood. And why is that? Why do we make the middle one out of wood? Because the wood, he says, symbolizes and represents all of the people who support the learning of Torah. Not necessarily are they excellent in their own learning, they don't necessarily excel, but they are supporters of those who learn and try on their level to learn. And therefore, he says like this, an interesting thing, that those kind of people, he says, everybody can do it. Anybody and everybody can support somebody learning Torah. And that's a very strong thing to do, like wood, which is quite a strong thing. But then he continues and he says, it's a very interesting thing with the Arayin, because usually in Torah we have this concept that we believe very much in everything should be as it is on the outside, it should be on the inside. And we always say, let's focus more on the inside rather than the outside, right? And inconsistency or hypocrisy is very looked down upon. So this sounds a bit strange that we have an Arayin made out of gold on the outside, but then it's almost as if when you peel away the first layer, what do you see? Wood. So it's like fake. It's like you say, covered with gold, but it's not really gold. Why do we do that? So there's a very interesting terminology that's used, teichai kibarei. You know, teichai kibarei means that's usually used in a negative connotation when somebody is taka hypocrite. You say, ain teichai kibarei. That is, inside is not like his outside. And that's obviously not a positive thing. But here, the Kliyakar says a beautiful thing. He says that not all of us are able to be perfect. Most of us are not perfect. And we try, so we have good parts to us. But sometimes we're just trying on the inside to get there, and it's not perfect. And that's okay. The Torah can still rest in such a person because we are all just striving. So we shouldn't think it's everything or nothing. Either I'm perfect or I just can't have any part of it. That's a very important thing that he teaches us. However, the Kliyakar says, we still have to realize that the inner box is gold. So outer box gold, the inner box gold, the middle is the wood, right? So you still have that deep inner core of gold. We're all trying, as we say. But then he goes on, he explains very beautifully, and he says, why the wood? So he says an interesting thing. The wood, as we say, that's really everybody can have a part of. And what does the wood represent? So we say that the wood represents, as we said, the supporters, but also the wood represents, just like wood comes from a tree makes fruits. What's the idea of a fruit? A fruit is yum. When you plant a tree, you know you're going to have benefit from it. So the fruit and the tree in this sense represents the concept that every time we learn, there is reward for our learning. That everybody likes. everybody can connect to the fact that we will get a reward for involving ourselves in Torah. That's something that everybody connects to. But to do Torah not necessarily for a reward, that's a little bit harder, and that's not everybody's level, so to speak. That's why he says a very beautiful thing. That's why we have both aspects. We have the aspect of gold, but we also have the aspect of the wood. And with the wood, it says it in the plural, everybody does it, because that applies to everybody. Everybody can connect to the fact that you do something for a reward. But then he goes on and he says, and I'm just going to read a little bit from the middle. Very interesting thing, because when it talks about the gold also, the outside box has gold and the inside box has gold. With the inside box, it says you should cover it with zahav tahar, pure gold. With the outside box, it doesn't mention the word tahar, pure. Of course it means pure gold. What other kind of gold do we mean? Why doesn't it mention it, though? So he says two things, very interesting. Because naturally, when a person does something, what they show on the outside, they put more effort into, right? So, like, a simple example would be if you know somebody's coming to your house, you'll clean up on the outside. Maybe if you open up the drawer, it's not so nice in there, but the outside will be clean. That you don't have to warn somebody, right? But here, that's why he says a very interesting thing. So he says the outside doesn't have to say pure gold. Only on the inside you have to make sure to warn. It should also be pure gold. Don't just think you can just, you know, do it patchwork, so to speak. So that's one very cute thing he says. But then he goes on and he explains even more, because I'll show you one other thing. Dover Acher. So it's in the middle of the paragraph. There's like three dots, and then it says Dover. I should have underlined, but Dover Acher. Kedei shenilmad mizeh shekol ma shehaadam oiseh kedei lahader es atzmai be'enei aleikim hu vaday tahar behechlet. Says, whatever a person does to beautify themselves for Hashem, for sure Hashem looks at it as if it is totally pure. So what we do between us and Hashem, Hashem knows our intent and He judges us favorably. Aval kol mashu marech hitzayni tahar einay tahar. Oh, sorry, this is the other way. No, just whatever we do, when we do it properly, and if we do it properly, we'll do it purely. But he says sometimes that means, okay, whatever we do when we're on our own, right? And if we do it properly, obviously the intention is good because nobody sees us. But if we're doing something in public, we're not always sure about our intention because sometimes we're motivated by consideration of what other people will think of us. That's why the outside one doesn't say Zahav Tahar, because it's not always purely motivated what we do when we're in public. How can we assess that we're doing something properly is even good morning if internally we do it, like when we're on our own and we do it properly, then we know that it was done with the right intent. Then he goes on and says something else very interesting. And he also said a very beautiful lesson that we find. And this is something that, like, it's a bit negative, but it's obviously to learn. He says, Jewish people are not naturally judgers favorably. We're quite critical. And he gives an example that even with our great holy leader, Moshe Rabbeinu, and we know it's actually in this week's parasha that we're going to read in Chumash Pekudei, after the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu had to give a full accounting, right? Because the Jewish people don't always trust everybody. You know, did he take any of the gold for himself? You know, even Moshe Rabbeinu, right? How could you not trust? So we say that it's a very interesting lesson. What we're supposed to, is very fascinating thing. He says like this, that what we do on, I'll show you inside very beautifully. So externally, whatever we do between us and Hashem, he says, and Hashem knows, and He judges us as long as we have pure intention. But to be pure on the outside, that's harder, which means in the perception of other people, that's a lot harder, and that's where we have to be a lot more careful. Ki miderech b'nei amenu, because it's the way of the people of our nation, ladunas kol adam lekaf chayva, to judge people not so favorably, to actually be very, very critical. And we don't necessarily say that somebody else is doing something with the right intention. And then he says, and v'chotsheyu, look how he says, ki mi lanu gadol mimayshu, who's greater than Moshe Rabbeinu, v'yichafu alav dvarim, v'chotshuhu b'ma she'ein bay. Like, people literally suspected him of things that for sure he would never have done. Davar achers, that's one thing. And then davar acher, ribayisum b'chutz, also a very beautiful one. Remez l'nigla v'nister shebeteira. It's showing us there's two parts of Torah. There's the revealed parts of Torah, and then there's the hidden parts of Torah, which we would know as Kabbalah and Chassidus and all the deeper parts of Torah. It's a very beautiful, this is the words of the Kli Yakar, v'yadua shehanister yeshba yoyser taharo kdusha min hanigla. The inside, the deeper parts of the Torah have more purity and more holiness than the revealed parts. On a simple level, we can say, because the hidden parts of Torah, really, what do they deal with? They deal with godliness, that's what you discuss, all kinds of pure matters. Whereas the revealed parts of Torah can involve halacha, which has to do something kosher or not kosher, right? So you have things that are impure, so to speak, that you're dealing with. But it's also the fact that when you are learning the deeper inner parts of Torah, you're connecting to the deeper inner parts of Hashem. So it's pure. So in other words, what the message here is, that when we put the arayin in, when we put the luchais into the arayin, a person has to realize that Torah, you have to take it in its entirety. You can't just learn one part and say, that's the part I like, because some people do. We all have a part of Torah that we feel that we can relate to more. Some people love halacha. They do, they just love halacha. Some people love, you know, all the hints and the secrets. Some people, you know, everybody has different things that they feel they connect to more. Here we see Torah comes as a whole. So yeah, you might enjoy certain parts more, but you really have to take the entire Torah. And every part of Torah has something special to add, whether it be the outside box, the middle box, or the middle box, so to speak. So that's how we have to take Torah. Okay. And then he also says, then I want to show. Then let's read this bottom paragraph. Vasisa olav zeh. Remember, we mentioned that crown. Amru razal. Shezeh remez l'keser Torah. This is a hint to the crown of Torah. U'bishulchan u'bimizbeach nemar vasisa loy. We mentioned this, that with the shulchan, with the table, and with the mizbeach, with the golden altar, it says, you shall make in the singular. Lefisha keser kuhunu malchus hu la'anoshim yuchadim. Because, as we know, the crown of kahuna, of priesthood, and the crown of kingship, that's for individuals, specific, unique individuals. Ki ein kahuna kiim l'mishu mizara arayin. Only a kayin only comes from arayin. Not anybody can be a kayin. Lekach ne'emar loy, that's why it says him in the singular. Aval keser Torah hefker lekol. But we know that's the whole idea. Torah is for everybody. It's free for everybody. Everybody can have a part of it. Lekach loy ne'emar loy, that's why it doesn't say him. It rather is in a very general and in a plural word. It's all inclusive. V'nokat loshen zer lahayres shemis shahamishdamesh bekisra shel Torah dinai. This is a very strong language. We have a concept that a person shouldn't use the crown of Torah for his own benefit. And if you do, the word zer means a crown, but it also means a stranger. And there's a concept that a stranger who comes into the Beis HaMikdash, in other words, somebody who's not a Kohen or a Levi, but mainly a Kohen, dies, right? If you cross over where you're not supposed to be. So it shows us that even though Torah is for everybody, and Torah is all-inclusive, you have to be careful how you use Torah. From this is a very interesting thing that we find, that especially in the times of the Tannaim and Amorah, and people were very careful about this. Many of them didn't want to make their living through their Torah. They had another profession. That's why you find Yechanan the Sanj, he was a shoemaker, and they were all different kinds of sort of low professions, because they didn't want to get money out of their learning of Torah. That you said that wasn't permissible, so to speak. Okay, that's an interesting thing. Okay, now let's go on now to the next page. Yes, Leah.
Sure.
I know. I know, it's funny. That's why I have both lessons together the whole time, because it's interchanging it in the wrong way, in a way. Only you. That's right. That's right. That's right. And that's why some parts of it, as we say, like the real gold is really only for individuals. That's why some parts of Torah Taka we won't all be able to reach on that level. And especially the level of somebody who can sit and exclusively learn Torah. You know, that's not for everybody. But that's right. And Israel. That's it. Let's go to number 7. I want to go, like I said, it's a little bit repetitive, but each one has its own beautiful way. And to show you something, the Gur Aryeh, that's on number 7, that's the Maharal. So this is the Gur Aryeh, which means he's explaining, it's also beautiful. Atse Shittim, what's the whole idea of using this wood in this arena? Why not just pure gold? So he says, Ki ha-Torah nikreis Eitz Chaim Machazikim Ba, the Torah is called the tree of life to those who support it. Lefichach haya ha-arein shel Eitz, that's why it was made out of this acacia wood. Why? Ki ha-Eitz hu netia kayemes. What's a tree? A tree is something that you plant and it lasts forever. Kach divrei Torah, hei mischabrim unetuim dveikim im Hashem yizbarech v'hu Kayim Nitzchi. Very interesting. What does Torah do? Torah connects us. It makes us cleave to God, who is eternal, and it is eternal, which means Hashem is eternal. When we learn Torah, we connect to the eternal Hashem, and it brings us eternity. So it's this concept of eternity, of something which lasts forever, like a tree that you plant and it lasts a very long time, much more than most things that we have, as he says. V'ilu hazov afal gabdach duhu, sorry, yeah, duhu choshev einay netia. So gold is very precious, but it's not something that you plant. Aval hatzipoy hu shel zahav. But nevertheless, we still do use gold, right? We cover it. We coat it with gold, as we say. Liyos hadavar hanira shel zahav. And what do we see? The thing that we see is the gold part. Al shem oyurech yomim biyamina. You know, when we take out the Sefer Torah and we say, actually, when we pick up the Sefer Torah, oyurech yomim biyamina uvismayla oysher v'kavayt, which means that on the right side is long life, and on the left side is wealth and honor. What does it mean? What is the right side long life and the left side wealth and honor? When we're talking about the right, that means the spiritual side. So the spiritual reward is the world to come, and that's forever. And that you don't see, right? That's the tree. That's the part you don't see. But what do you see? There's also benefits to Torah in the immediate, not just in the future, in the now. And that's what he says, that is represented by the gold. Only Hashem sees, obviously, the Olam Haba. But the honor and the wealth, that benefit you have in this world, and that's something that we can see immediately. So the Arein combines both. You have the immediate good and the long-term good. It has both aspects. You know, we say sometimes some things are good immediately, and then afterwards you're not too happy, like some kinds of food that you might enjoy, and then later you regret eating it. Sometimes you have things that are not so pleasant at the beginning. Perhaps, I don't know, some exercise you might not enjoy doing, but the benefits are later on. So here we say with Torah, it combines both. It has the immediate benefits, and it has the long-term benefits. Okay, let's see another thing about the wood, another beautiful thing. So this is similar, the Rabbeinu B'chai, number 8. V'yesh lefaresh oid v'asu arein atzei shittim, that you should make it out of acacia wood. Eilu ha-messayin lo'iske ter. So he again says very specifically, when we're talking about the arein being made out of this wood, because we're talking about those who help the ones who learn Torah. V'tzipisa oisai zahav, and you coat it with gold, tahar, pure gold. Al shem sha'kadosh baruch hu osid lasais tzel l'shneihem yachad. A very beautiful thing. When we say, you remember how the boxes work? They really fit very snugly. It's not like it's separate. Mamash almost becomes one. Because even though you tell a person that supporting somebody learning is very important and Hashem values it, but you still might feel second best, less. Here he shows you, no, no, no. They all fit together because they all work together. They work together equally, as he says. And that's why in the future we use the terminology that Hashem will make this sail, right? As we can say, he will make like this shelter that everybody will sit together. And who will sit together? Those who learn and those who support those who learn. And that's why we have both parts. Let me just want to see something very beautiful. And he brings a very nice little, and he brings also the fact, and we'll discuss that when we get to that part about the badim, the sticks, as we said, of the Aron are never removed. They also represent, they represent those who carry the Torah. So carrying the Torah means enabling those who learn Torah. And with the Aron, they are never removed. Why? Because they're always connected. And they are eternal, and they are just as important as the rest of the Aron to hold the Luchos in. Another important thing he says very beautifully, and he uses the beautiful mashal, I think it says Darshu Razal, I'm not sure exactly from where, but it says that the clusters of grapes, they ask Hashem, it's a beautiful analogy, they beg Hashem to have mercy on the leaves. Why? Because they know if not for the leaves, well, they won't grow. The leaves protect them from the sun and from the rain and from the insects and whatever it needs to be. So the same way, those who learn Torah have to make sure to value, and they do ask Hashem for protection, not only for themselves, but for those who support them, because they realize they wouldn't exist without it. Okay, there's such a fascinating thing. The one thing is, it's true, they're, in a sense, they have an equal value, and yet the one who's protecting, the one learning Torah, should remember that obviously the learning Torah is very precious, and therefore, in a sense, he has to respect the one learning Torah. Just like the leaves know that it only exists because of the clusters of grapes, because who would daven for the leaves if not for the grapes? So it's both sides, both aspects to it. Okay, let's go to number 9. If any questions, you can ask, but we'll just move on. Let's see number 9. He's a very nice, this is the Naim Elimelech, a little bit of a Chassidish insight. What is Atzei Shittim, as we say, this wood? What does it represent? He says, Deha Tzadik Nikra'et. This represents the Tzadik. The acacia wood represents the Tzadik. And why is a Tzadik called Eitz? Shehu Dovuk Be'etz HaChayim. Because a Tzadik is always connected, always one with the tree of life. You know how he says, is there a tree amongst them? Meaning, is there a tzaddik? That's what he asks about in Eretz Canaan, you know, before the Meraglim go in. Uperish Rashi, Adam Kosher. Is there a kosher person there? So is there somebody worthy? Vizoshamer Avram Avinu. That's what Avram said to the angels, to the Malachim. Fish anu tachas ha'etz, that you should rest and be protected under the tree. What does that mean? Shera oisam, because he saw them, these three malachim that came. He didn't know first exactly who they were, but he thought, oy shehem tzadikim gemurim, either they're completely like, you know, the most incredible tzadikim, oy shehem arvim, or they're just ordinary Arabs, you know, passerbys. Kepeirish Rashi, v'amar lahem lefi ru'us einai atem tzadikim gedailim. And Avram, who had that extra sensitivity, said, looks like to me that these are not just ordinary people that came. These are great tzaddikim. And that's why he says, "Hishanu tachas ha'etz, hainu etz ha'chaim." Rest here under the tree of life. And that's why we also have this concept, again, with this concept of tree, why it's so important to have wood. V'yayreyu Hashem etz, with Moshe Rabbeinu, when the Jewish people left Mitzrayim and they were thirsty. And it says like this, "Al yidei ha'tzaddik ne'pach mar l'masak." Hashem told him to take the tree, throw it into the water, and the water from bitter became sweet. And this is what a tzaddik does. A tzaddik transforms from bitter to sweet. The yimtiku hamayim, and the water became sweet. Shehim tikaisam. And that's what he says, that the tzaddikim, shehim nikram atzei shittim, they are called this acacia wood. Roshe tevis, very beautiful. What does shittim stand for? Shalom, peace. Toiva, good. Yeshua, salvation. And mizayne is sustenance, because it is in their merit that the world is sustained. As we know the famous thing, it says Rabbi Hanina ben Zaisa, he was happy with his carob that he ate the whole week, but the whole world was sustained in the merit of Rabbi Hanina ben Zaisa. So everybody else was able to enjoy all their things. He didn't care about it. He was happy with his carob. But why did they have it? Because of his great righteousness and his Torah. Hainu shehem mamshichim hakol olam. They draw everything down into the world. V'heim yiru ikar sheyif'alu b'tayrasam. Right? So they actually, they're the ones who accomplish so much through what? Through the learning of their Torah. Okay, so these are all very beautiful things. Why trees and why wood and why gold? And each one symbolizes different things, as we can see. But it's all, as we say, together. We have the three boxes. One more beautiful thing that the Gemara tells us. This one I might actually do orally, and I know if I had if I was good on the computer, I would show you, but I'm sure it's not so, and I'm sure you've heard this concept, but I'll try my best. It's just a visual thing that it's very important. You can't leave the Arayin without mentioning it before we go to another beautiful part about the history of the Arayin. The Arayin was put, as we said, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, right? So it was in the Mishkan, and then it was in the Beis HaMikdash. Now, the Arayin measured 2.5, right? 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5, right? We have a very interesting concept that the Arayin, when it was made out of physical wood, physical gold, a physical person made it, and the luchos were put inside, and the broken luchos were put inside, and according to some opinions, even the Sefer Torah was put inside, whatever, however that worked. But that's what it was. So it was a real physical box that you could see. Most of the time you didn't see it because it was in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When they traveled in the desert, they were lucky when it was carried, so maybe people could catch a glimpse. There was times, interesting in history, especially after the destruction of the Mishkan in Shiloh, when it was captured by the Plishtim, and afterwards when it was returned, there's a beautiful story of how David HaMelech recaptured the Arayin and how he takes it to Jerusalem. There wasn't a Beis HaMikdash yet, but it's magnificent, the story there, that we won't do that, but the way it was a whole procession and of like the most beautiful parade with music and dancing and sacrifices and the most incredible celebration. And over there, people would have been able to see the Arayin. So it was a physical thing. However, when you placed it into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Kodesh HaKadoshim measured 20 amos, the whole length of it. And you put the Arayin into the middle. So what would you imagine if the Arayin measures 2.5? Somebody who's a mathematician will take off. So if you take off 2.5, you have to take off from the 20. So you'd have, 7.5 and 7.5 on each side, or 8.5 and 8.5 on each side. Whatever it is, you'd have, on each side, you would have whatever's left, right? The remainder. But miraculously, we are told that if you measured the Arayin from both sides, outside of the Arayin, there was 10 on one side and 10 on the other. So it measured 2.5, but it didn't measure 2.5. Again, something we cannot understand because we're not meant to, because our brain is limited. This represents godliness, and that's really the biggest representation of godliness that we had in this world, where we have something which takes place and doesn't take place, right? As we know, in the terminology used many times, nimna ha-nimnais. It's the impossible of impossible. And this is Hashem, because the truth is, that's what Hashem does. Hashem is here, but he's... Are we here? You know, it's a very difficult thing. If Hashem is everywhere and Hashem hasn't changed, he's the same God before he created the world and after he created the world, how is that possible? Are we really here? Do we really exist? On one level, yeah. Like the Arayin, it was there. But we don't really take place. Really, it's all godliness. So this is something that, as Jews, it's really a very important part of our view of everything. Why? Because a very interesting thing, and this leads to something that I'll come back to the Arayin. I want to do something and then I'll come back. So even though it's something to do with now, and I want to just show you, where's my papers? I made another copy, but of course I'm not going to find where I put them. Ah, here it is, I think it's here. I just want to show you something really beautiful. And you think it's not to do with Chumash, but it also brings out this point, I think, because as I said, this is the only way we can expect this of ourselves is because we are like the Arayin. Okay. 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 So I'm just going to take a second, and Daisy, I did something, a little bit of this on Shabbos, but not also, just one little bit here.
Thank you.
Here we go. So the top is just, I just want to quickly read this. Just, I think for now, this is a very important thing for all of us, for me, doing it for myself. I have to read it 100 times a day and not look at the phone, but like this. So just a quick thing. A lot is expected of us now. You know, you get all the WhatsApps and everybody's bombarding that we're Jews and that we look at the, you know, what the situation is. And everybody's saying not to be afraid, just do the right thing. And it's not simple, as we know. It's not a simple ask. It's quite a difficult ask. So I just want to show you something. One of the big things that it discusses that many of the people are saying and written from all the tzaddikim, that what we do have to strengthen for sure is bitachon. That's for sure. So just very quickly, I want to show you what is bitachin. This really takes a lot of learning, but I'll just show you one beautiful paragraph that we're not going to do in depth, just to show you this is the definition of what is true trust in Hashem, according to the Chovos HaLevavos in the Shara Bitachin. One of the most famous places where we explain what is bitachin. But the next one you'll see is a very beautiful concept, which we know. Okay. Mahos HaBitachin. What is like the essence of trust? Hi menuchas nefesh habayteyach. Trust is the tranquility of the soul of the one who trusts, which means, and this is a hard one, because a lot of times I say, yeah, of course I trust. My stomach is turning 100 times, I'm in the bathroom 5 times a day, but I'm trusting. No. Trust really means that you are really with menuchas hanefesh. It's a big ask. It's not an easy ask. This is a lot of learning, a lot of developing. But just let's see what it is. Your heart should really be relying totally on the one in whom you are trusting. That he will do what's good and what's right for you. In the matter that you are trusting. And obviously, in our case, we're talking about, and he does explain this, that the only one we could truly trust is Hashem, because he's the only one that knows what's good for us and knows what's right for us. And he's the only one that could actually deliver that. But this is the essence of trust, is this ability to really, truly, internally feel that. Kefiach, that the one that you are trusting will actually deliver, so to speak. Kefiacholtai v'daitai b'mashamefik taivasai, according to his understanding of what is good for you. So the person you are trusting in will do good. And as he says, aval ha'ikar, the main thing, asher ba'avura yiha bitachon min ha'beteach, what is one of the most crucial criteria that will ensure that you will be able to trust? The most important thing, he says, v'im yipakeid lo yimotze ha'bitachon, and if this is missing, there is no trust. That you trust that the one you're trusting in will actually fulfill what they say. That's what trust means. Trust means that the person will deliver. Well, a person can. That's what he discusses, because they're not in control of themselves. But that Hashem will actually deliver. But he says, and what does this mean? The Yaseh Masha'arav, he will do what he promises. The Yachshav Olav Hatoiv, B'mashalai Hitnalai, V'loi Arav Asayu, even more. Real trust comes, and we know in a relationship even, what we expect is that the other person, we sometimes expect it too much, will do even when we don't spell it out. Like, you know, we say, you know, you send whatever, some, if you're lucky, if you have a husband, whatever, you send somebody, a good friend, and you tell them to go buy something for you, and they come back with, I don't know, and then you found out later that in the store there was something else on sale, and you say, didn't you think that I would want that? Didn't you understand? So true trust, when you have true trust, it means that you feel that the other person will be looking out for you, even not only in things that you're asking for, not only in things that they promised, but in anything that is good for you, so to speak. They will deliver. They will know, they will realize, they will understand, they will feel what you need and want, and they will actually deliver. And as he says, she'aseyu nedava v'chesed, and a very important part, unconditional. So even if the day before they asked you a favor and you didn't follow through, they will still follow through. So these are all. Now this paragraph, the Chovos HaLevavos develops in a lot of parts, and we're not going to go into that today. But just to understand, this is the feeling, the most important thing here, menuchas nefesh. This is what we're striving. So I want to show you something that, for me, this was very beautiful. This is from a Ben Ish Chai, right? The Ben Ish Chai was the very, very great Sephardic leader who lived in Iraq, in Baghdad, not that long ago, passed away like in 1910 or something. And very interesting. It's written about a Gemara. Obviously, we'll see soon. There must have been a difficult time. We know all through the ages, this is not the first time. It's our first time. It's not the first time in the world that it's been disrupted with plagues and things. As we know, we are so, so fortunate that we have so much more now. And because of that, we are not used to this, so it should continue that way. But let's see. So let's see what he says. So there's a very interesting Gemara. The Gemara discusses and says, Dever ba'ir knois raglecha. If a plague comes to the city, knois raglecha actually means run. First advice, escape. Leave the city. If there's a plague in the city, leave the city. But then the Marsha says an interesting thing. Perish HaKavana, what does it mean? Im einata bayreya chutz la'ir l'makam achar. What happens? You can't. You don't run out of the city to another place. Az ta'ase takonazu lihiyos muskar b'beisecha. Next best thing, close yourself in your house. As we say, the isolation. So don't mix. You laugh, you think it's funny, you think it's like modern, right? It's not from the time of the Gemara. Yeah, it's on, everything is there. In Torah we have the washing the hands, everything is there, it's unbelievable. Okay, but there's a whole discussion what you should do and which kind of illnesses we're talking about. Some maybe it's not so good to stay. Let's see what he says. So he goes on, I'm not gonna do justice. Obviously this takes its own learning of the Gemara and all the different things, but I wanna get to one beautiful point that Ben Ish Chai will tell us. You shouldn't leave the entrance of your house. V'harav in Yaakov Zal Perish HaKavan, and this other Rav explains what does it mean to have bricha min ha'ir, that when it talks about running away from the city, he taiva unachayna kaidem shenischazek hadever bayir. That's before the plague has taken a real stronghold in the city. Then it might be time for you to take escape and run away or go somewhere else. But nevertheless, he says, aval dever bayir shenischazek hadever. But once it's already become strong and, you know, it's like so widespread, loitayil habricha, it's not going to help to run away. Shegam hadever yelech imahem. You're just going to take it with you. What's it going to help? So he says, lamakim sholchem, to wherever you go. Real zal, and okay, so all different things. The kumaykein harav teres chayim zechrein elavracha ayin sham. He says v'da kol zeh shekosvu hamar shazal v'haravin Yaakov zal hu bedever. So that was with dever, whatever dever, some kind of plague that we would call dever. But the Ben Ish Chai says, and this was for many, many years, we know that one of the biggest challenges that people faced that kept on coming was cholera. I don't know how you say it. How do you say it? What's the right way to pronounce it? Cholera, right? Okay. So cholera, right? So that was something that was, as we know, many times over and really caused tremendous disaster. So he says, aval b'chayli ha-cholera, afilu im nischazek ha-chayli ba'ir, toif she'yivrach. So they advise that even if it's strong in the city, you should run away. V'gam bazel lo yayil ha-hezka b'beisai shaber. It won't even help if you close yourself in your house. Yan kizeh ha-chayli shal ha-cholera yazik la'adam ha-pachad. And now he goes to the most important part that I want to show you. Why? Okay, this may be contagion, but he brings something else out. He says, what's the idea of running away? And we'll see what he means by running away, because we can't run away. There's nowhere to run. Where are we running? He says, because what's more dangerous than anything is the fear and the anxiety. Those are the words he uses. Literally, fear and anxiety. And he says, what's going to happen? Machmas hapachad v'hav asad. Very strong language. That the illness will actually, you will catch it, so to speak, because you are afraid and because you are anxious. That's what's going to cause you to catch it even faster, so to speak, even if it's there. Asher yifchad v'nivas. V'oimrim haroifim. So now he brings a very interesting analogy. It's like an analogy. It's not an analogy. It's like a story, if you want to say. Maise b'derech moshol u'melitza. Pam achas haya chayli ha-cholera be'ir achas gedela. So once it was a terrible plague of cholera in one big city, the kaidim shenischazek ha-chayli, before the plague actually took hold of the city, motza adam echad es ha-mashchis ha-memuna al chayli ha-cholera. So one person found, we would call him, I don't want to say, the Malach HaMavis, found the one who's coming, who's sent by God to cause the plague, right, the one who's going to come and decide who's going to live and who's not going to live, right? And what does this person do? He asks this malach, he asks them something. What does he ask? He says, how many, kama nefoshes ataraitzalika, how many are you going to take in this city? How many? How many are you sent to take? So he says, v'amar, chamisha alafim, in this city, I'm taking 5,000. V'soif davar mesu ba'aysa ha'ir, tesvav alafim. But by the time that plague finished, 15,000 were gone. So this person meets this malach, this mashchis, this terrible, and he says to him like this, Lama shikarta, why did you lie? I understand, you told me, Shamarta ata shliach al misper chamisha alafim. You said you're a messenger to take 5,000. And what did you do? V'lakachta tesva, but you took 15,000. The heishiv, he says, I didn't lie, loy shakarti. Ki loy lakachti b'charbi, al yodi, el rak chamisha alafim. I only took with my own hand 5,000. So how did the other 10,000 go? V'oysom ha'asara meisu machmas roiv ha'pachad v'hav osa shahoyo lahem ba'avor ha'choyli hazeh ba'ir. They died on their own from the fear and the anxiety that was induced in them, and that's what caused them. It wasn't me, it was the fear and the anxiety. So he says a very interesting thing. Obviously, it is a mashal, m'derech melitza, l'haydia. Sheyesh nitfe b'loy mishpat, machmas pachad v'havasa, right? Sometimes a person, unfortunately, can be, you know, as we say, in a sense, almost swallowed up, not meant to, whatever, because he allows himself to have this anxiety. So what does it mean to run away from the city? So let's see the words he used. V'lochin toiv livrayach l'makim rachayk. Good to run away somewhere far. Kedei shelo yishma ba'aznav. So he doesn't hear with his ears. V'lo yire be'enav. And he shouldn't see with his eyes. Ha'chayli ha'shaylet b'bnei adam. All of the illness that is around him that's taka happening. And v'yavei lidei pachad v'havasa. And then he comes to fear. And he says, Az yilaka chasram, then he can unfortunately also be hit by the plague. Hashem yisparach berachamav, and Hashem with His kindness yivatal kol gzeres kashus will annul all terrible decrees, bad decrees. May aleinu, may al kol yisrael v'la yishma shayd v'shever begvuleinu. Right, we won't hear of any damage, any terrible things in our borders. Ubegvul kol ama yisrael. Ubila hamavas lanetzach, and let the death be swallowed up forever. V'lay noisif ledava oid amin ken yehirat, and won't have any more upset. The way we can do it is we don't have to run away. Ben Ishchai, late 1800s to the early 1900s. But this is all based on, but this is all not only him, this has been said over through the generations. Just close the phone, that's all. We don't have to run away. From the city, we have to close the phone. It's terrible now. It's the worst it's ever been. Because in those times, you have to actually look out the window. Here, you don't look out the window. You can close yourself in your house, and you're taking it with you. So this is a very important message. And that's what we say with the bitachon. That's what we have to understand. We have to trust, and we have to learn. We have to develop and work on. It's not easy, and it's up and down, but not to be afraid. It's the most important thing. We have to not allow ourselves to fall into that, because that's more dangerous than the illness itself, as he says. And this is very strong language that the Ben Ishchai says, I have to say. Very strong language. Now, so the question, you know, it's interesting because with Jews, I mean, there's many other beautiful things. I don't know if you've seen, there's a lot of things that have been going around, but there was a very interesting one with Reb Yenis and Apeshitz. He lived in the early 1800s. 1831, this was a specific, also was a very big plague also in the city of cholera, I think it was also. I looked it up, it was in Posen, and it came then actually from the Far East also, and it was terrible. And he had this thing where he instituted, where he was very strict on his congregation, and he made certain rules. And part of the rules was that he didn't want large gatherings, and he said that, this was in 1831, never mind, now we're in 2000, yeah? He said that they should have minyanim a whole day, 15 people should come into the shul, there should be a guard there, and then let the next 15 people in. And then so people shouldn't be big gatherings, small gatherings. And it actually, I looked it up, very interesting, historically it's written that in the Jewish community of where he was the Rav, there was a lot less casualties than in the wider community. And afterwards, the head of the city actually gave him like a certain plaque of honor, because he managed to take care of his flock and guide them in the right way. But the other things that he did also tell his people was the idea of bitachin, saying the keteiris that's been going around, to learn the keteiris, which is the incense, which was actually in just last week's parasha, and saying extra tehillim. And as we can understand from all of this, is also strengthening in our bitachin. But you see that we are being asked something quite difficult. Because as Jews, that's what I was saying about the Arayim, we literally live in two worlds simultaneously. Two opposite existences together. We do not divorce ourselves from this world. And we don't say, don't listen to the doctors, because everything's going to be fine. We don't say we live in a different world. We live in this world. The doctors say this, you do this. You're right, you have to take care of our health. We have to live in this world, we have to do the right thing. And at the same time, remain above it. So that's not an easy ask. It's easy either to be either way. Either to be in total panic mode, or to be in total ignoring mode, right? Denial. We don't. We have both together. And we can. How can we? Because we're like Zaharim. We take place and we don't take place. And we have to remember that our whole existence is miraculous. We wouldn't be here otherwise, and we know that. We just have to look back in the last generation and we know that. We would not be here if Hashem didn't want us to be here. That's for sure. No question about it. So we already have that. That can strengthen our inner bitachon. But we do have to develop and realize and really internalize that we are truly like the Arayin. We're here and we're not here. So we can have both things together. We can do the right thing and understand what the right measures are, not be lax, not put other people in danger, and at the same time, remain calm, remain secure in the knowledge, as we said, that Hashem, He does what's good for us, and He wants to do what's good for us, and we can trust in Him. So we have to work on having both things together really, really, really strongly. That's a very big, it's not, as I say, it's actually the hardest ask, but we can do it. And we have to really, really believe it. And that's why we had the Arayin, which was there to show us that. Okay, I want to just show you something else. If any questions or... Okay, I want to just show you something beautiful. I don't think you have it inside. I'll just share with you orally. There's another beautiful thing inside, but I want to share you something. Remember last week we asked about the Arayin, about what happened to it, right? So the Arayin, we say, was made here now. Very special, the special Arayin. It lasted for quite a long time. We actually believe that the Arayin is still in existence in a very special place. So let's understand how that works. So we say like this, that the Arayin had it was in the Holy of Holies. It had the both luchais, and that was last week's parashah, the broken luchais. Had the complete luchais, the broken luchais, the Sefer Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote. It was a very special object. It went with the Jewish people first in the desert, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, obviously. Then when they entered the land of Israel, it was carried also, miraculously, it carried its people who carried it. It was a very heavy thing. According to some opinions, it was like 8,000 kilos. I don't know. It was impossible to carry. It carried the ones who held it. So this is mamish miraculous. That was, the Arayin was, as we say, really a miraculous kind of a keli. That's what it says somewhere. I don't know if that's possible, but whatever. It was extremely heavy and not physically possible to lift. So it lifted itself. Hashem carried it. That's what it says, actually. The Arayin went with the Jewish people into the land of Israel. In the land of Israel, we know that the first 500 years, there was no Beis HaMikdash. There was the Mishkan. The Mishkan moved around to a few places. First, it was in Gilgal for 14 years. There was the Arayin there. Then it was in Shiloh for 369 years. They had the Arayin there. When Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim, just, you know, at the time of Eli's death, unfortunately, the Arayin was captured, and they had it. The Arayin was captured, and there was a Mishkan in Noiv and in Givayin for about 57 years. There was no Arayin there. Interesting. Then David HaMelech was lucky, unbelievably managed to recapture the Arayin, as we said, and he brought it to Jerusalem. When Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, that was a very big part that they were able to put the Arayin into the Beis HaMikdash. And it says in the Rambam, actually writes the history, that at the time that Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, the first Beis HaMikdash, it was a magnificent building, and the people were literally on a high, and to most people, what they assumed was that this Beis HaMikdash would be it. This is eternity. This is Jerusalem. We're not traveling anymore. Shlomo HaMelech, as we know, the time of Shlomo HaMelech was literally similar to the times of Mashiach. Everybody, talk about there was no plagues, everybody was had money, everybody was comfortable, everybody had everything that they needed. Not only the Jewish people, but the nations around. It was the most magnificent time in history. So they built the Beis HaMikdash, and at that time, you would think it's an eternal Beis HaMikdash. History tells us that when Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash, he actually built a special place underneath in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. It says a windy, it actually describes it, windy, curvy tunnel deep, deep inside that he had made already. What was the purpose of that? He said, in the future, when the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, or if the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed, you will take this Arayin and you will hide it down in this deep tunnel, down, down, down. Interesting that at that time already they had it. It says at the end, just not right before, about 50 years before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was one of the kings called Yoshiyahu. He was actually a tzaddik. At that time they weren't so amazing, but there was a little bit of an oasis. It was a tzaddik. And he ordered, it describes specifically, he ordered a whole special team of Levim or Kehanim to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim to take the Arayin and actually put it into its hiding place. So this was already 50 years before the Babylonians came in. This is one opinion. I have to say that there is another opinion in the Gemara that it was captured by the Babylonians. There is such an opinion. But the one opinion is that it was actually hidden into those tunnels. Now, what does that mean? That means something interesting. What happens when they come back and build the second Beis HaMikdash? People don't realize that the second Beis HaMikdash, the Arayin wasn't in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Kodesh HaKadoshim was like almost an empty room. There was no Arayin. There was no Luchais. It was there underneath, but you couldn't see it. It wasn't there. And what will happen, please God, when we will rebuild the third Beis HaMikdash, we will just open up those tunnels and we will find that same Arayin, and it's there. Why? What's the point of this? What is the point of first Shlomo HaMelech already making, so to speak, a place, almost looking as if, you know, at the height of the building? We have to mention, we have to think about the destruction. What could be worse than that? And also, why is it that they had to hide a dafka there? What's the idea? And why is it that the Rambam even tells us about this in such detail in his book of Halacha? What is the Halacha of this? So it explains something very beautiful, that if we think about it, as we mentioned already, the Arayin really is the key keli, it's the key vessel. Especially in the Beis HaMikdash, it says that the Arayin is what makes the Beis HaMikdash the Beis HaMikdash. That's the holiness of it. Without the Arayin, it's almost as if it's not a Beis HaMikdash, because that's the revelation of godliness, as with all the miracles, everything of it. So like this, if we say that the second Beis HaMikdash doesn't have the Arayin, what that would mean is that the second Beis HaMikdash wasn't really a Beis HaMikdash. It was missing. It was like a missing Beis HaMikdash. In a certain way, it was. But here we see something very powerful, that when Shlomo HaMelech builds the first Beis HaMikdash, he already makes provisions. And he has two places for the Arayin. One place is a revealed place, and one is a hidden place. What does that mean? It means that they are both equally the place of the Arayin, whether it be in the revealed place or in the hidden place. They were built to begin with as a place designated for the Arayin. That's why when Yeshayahu hid it, he didn't wait for the destruction. He did it way before. And he did it in an honorable way with the Kohanim being able to bury it there. That shows us such a powerful thing. First of all, the first Beis HaMikdash is eternal. It was never fully destroyed because the Arayin is in the right place all the time. Not only is it eternal, but all the Beis HaMikdashes are connected one to the other. And the second Beis HaMikdash is also complete. It's not incomplete because the Arayin is there. That's another thing it shows us. The other thing that it shows us, which is extremely amazing, is that even at the time of building, so to speak, at the height, the peak, happiness, what do we remember? The destruction. Why? Are we people looking for doom and gloom? No. Because the point of the destruction was for the rebuilding. We have to realize that that's life, right? Life has ups and life has downs, as I would say now is not such an up time. But what we have to realize is the purpose of the down is for the greater heights that we will be achieving soon. How do we know that, and how do we have the strength? Because already at the beginning, it's set out in a way where this is how Hashem made the world, that you can have the glory, the revelation, and you do, and that gives you strength. But then is going to come a time of concealment. And during that time of concealment, you will be aware that even though it's a concealment doesn't mean it's missing. It's just that you don't see it. It's not so obvious, but it's there. And where is it? In these deep, dark, windy, curvy tunnels. But it will come out again very, very soon, and we will see it again. And when we do, we will be on an even higher and deeper level. And in Kabbalah, it explains beautifully that the idea of a windy, curvy concept, it's interesting. It says like this, that we have the concept of something coming to you directly. So like if you hand somebody something, or if you throw, even an example would be, if I throw you a ball and you catch it. What happens if I take a ball and I throw it at the wall and then it comes back at me? It comes back with much more force. That would be called an archezer. It's a rebounding light. This is the Arayin that we have now, which we do. It's there. They've tried to find it. Nobody has ever found it. Where is it? Under what we call the Evan HaShasiyah, that foundation stone of the world. And right under there, in a deep dark tunnel, there is the Arayn in its entirety, completely, as beautiful as it was when it was first created. It's there, and when it will be revealed, we will, because of our journey and our, so to speak, bouncing against the wall, we're going to come back much, much stronger with a much greater revelation. And this is the idea of the Arayn, as you can see. So a very beautiful thing that we take from it is that the Arayn is eternal. Talk about where it is. And it's there. And it's in the place of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's in the place which Shlomo HaMelech built for it originally. So it's in a good spot, in a safe spot, as we can say. Obviously not the ideal of ideals, because we want to be able to have it revealed, and we want the Beis HaMikdash built, and that will happen very, very soon. But what we know is that when Mashiach will come, it's not a matter of rebuilding the Arayn, it's just picking it up from where it is and putting it to where it really belongs. And Mirtz Hashem, very, very soon. So we should just have strength. The right, but soon, Rona, right? Very soon, Mirtz Hashem. All right, so we'll have a good week in Mirtz Hashem, and everybody will stay healthy and well, and yes. Sure. I know, not a very nice word, is it?